The last Mishnah of the first parak of Avos, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Ashtosha Devar Ma'olam Kayam, the world continues to endure for three things, Al HaDin, Val HaEmes, Val HaShalom, Din, justice, Emes, truth, Shalom, peace, Shenemar, Emes U'Mishpat Shalom Shiftu B'Sha'arechem. Pasuk mentions all three, Emes, Mishpat, and Shalom, in your gates. The Mefarshim will contrast this Mishnah with the first Mishnah, or second Mishnah of the Parak, where the second Mishnah says, Shimon HaTzadik would say, Al Shlosha Devarim Ha'olam Omeid, Al Atara V'Al Avod V'Mizcha Sadam. So you have one Mishnah saying the world stands on Torah, Avodah, and Chesed. And you have this Mishnah that says the world is Kayam on Din, Emes, and Shalom. And they may sound a little similar, but they are not the same. And what was each one trying to say? Shimon HaTzadik was saying that the world stands on Torah, Avodah, and Chesed. And we understand that to mean that is why the Ibrahim created the world. The Ibrahim Hashem created the world, Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim. If you know the Rashi in the beginning of Bereishis Bara Elokim, Beis, Reishis, Bishvil, Reishis, Bishvil Torah, Bishvil Yisrael, the Ibrahim Hashem created the world for Klai Yisrael, for the Torah. The things that the Ibrahim Hashem wants us to do in this world to make the world give its reason to exist is Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim. If those are the things that the world is created for, logic would dictate they will also give it the energy to continue. Our social drama Olam Kayam means the world continues to exist for these three, Din, Emes, and Shalom. So why isn't it the first three? If the world is created for Torah, Avodah, and Mitzvah Sadim, you would think Torah, Avodah, and Mitzvah Sadim gives it the energy to continue to be Kayam. And I'm sure there is much to be said about these two Mishnayis. The Beis Yosef, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, addresses this question and he answers that each of the Tanoim spoke for his time frame. Shimon HaTzadik was from the Shi'arei Knesset HaGedola. Shimon HaTzadik saw the Beis HaMikdash, saw the Chorban. Can you see the Chorban? I'm not sure about that part. He definitely saw the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel, at the end of the first parak, was after the Churban. That was after the Churban. So the Beis Yosef says, when the Beis HaMikdash stood, Torah is Torah, Avodah is Karbanos, Gemilas Chasadim is what it should be. The world was created for these things, and the world continues to exist for those things. But after the Churban, they weren't able to learn Torah like they did before. That's why Torah Shebaal Peh began to be recorded. They couldn't learn Torah anymore, Baal Peh. They couldn't do it the way it had been done before. People were forgetting. People were not capable of grasping the way they did in early generations. So eventually the Mishnayos were recorded, and eventually the Gemara was written down. Before that, time based HaMikdash was unheard of. Everything was done Baal Peh. Torah was not the same. Avodah used to be Kabbanis. Real Avodah, based HaMikdash. That changed. It's no longer. Even Chesed, when you're in Eretz Yisrael and basically stands, you're more free to do Chesed than when you're in Golos. When you're in Golos and you have the burden of Golos, you're limited in what you can do in terms of Chesed. So the Beis Yosef says, when Shimon HaTzadik was talking about time of Beis HaMikdash, so the world was created and continued for Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim. What our Mishnah is saying, Shimon Gamliel is saying, is that even in time of Churban, you don't have Torah, Avodah, and Mitzvah Sadim the way you did. So we have Din, which is in lieu of Torah. We have Emes, which he says is in lieu of Avodah. And we have Shalom, which is in lieu of Mitzvah Sadim. He says that the same way Avodah brings us close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so does Emes. Emes brings us close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Shalom ties in with Chesed, and Din is based on Torah. So that's how the Beis Yosef explains it. He explains the two Mishnayos are discussing different time frames, and therefore it's kind of like watered down. And had the world not been created strong with Torah and Shalom, then it wouldn't last. You couldn't just create the world only on Din, Emes, and Shalom. The world wouldn't get off the ground. Wouldn't start if you just start with the watered down version. But once you start strong with Torah, so then afterwards, if all you have is Din, Emes, and Shalom, the world will continue to exist. That's how Beis Yosef explains this Mishnah. Now, the Pasuk tells us, Emes u'mishpat shalom shiftu b'sha'aveichem, and there really is a connection of one to the other. When you have din, when there isn't corruption, when things are done justly, and things are done truthfully, there'll hopefully be shalom. You know, we have a brach in Shmona Esrei. Hashiva shavtenu kivari shana v'yaseinu v'atchila v'haseh mimenu yagon v'anacha. When we don't have the judges like we used to, we don't have that kind of guidance and that kind of decision making, we have yagon and anacha. We have all kinds of distress, we have all kinds of upset, and it's hard to alleviate. And if we would have the shoftim, like once upon a time, it doesn't mean the shoftim of sefer shoftim. It means judges, it means tribunals, it means dayanim, the way they used to be. So things would be settled, and that's it. And then everybody would be b'shalom. Unfortunately, we don't have like they used to have. There's still batei din in cities, and on occasion they're dinei Torah. Most people are pretty upset. Very often, no one's happy when they leave a din Torah. Neither side really got what they wanted. Very often, the Beis Din resolves to compromise because it's not clear-cut, one way or the other. We can't make a clear decision, so we compromise. It's almost a given in many situations that when you go to a Beis Din to adjudicate an issue, they'll end up compromising, which means no one's really happy. But it's better than nothing. In other words, each one gets something. Each one loses something. Sometimes it's clear-cut. Sometimes it's very clear-cut, and Beis Din will just say, you know, nothing to talk about. Sometimes I've known Rabbanim who say, it's so petty, I'll pay. The person goes to the Rav, and this fellow, over the fighting over $200, here's $200, go home, you know, leave me alone. For $200, $500, don't make a whole tumult with a Beis Din. But it's not the way it used to be. It's not the way we used to have a system. The Sanhedrin in every city, and different levels Sanhedrin, Tosanhan HaGadol, we don't have the way it used to be. And it does lead to a certain degree of upset and distress, and that's part of what we're simply davening. So when you have Din and Emes, so there's a degree of Shalom that's going to be set up through a judicial system that people would abide by. Emes, you know, I don't think I have to tell you the importance of Emes. Chosama shal Kadosh Baruch Hu Emes. Hashem's seal is Emes. We are encouraged to be faithful to everything we say, a commitment we should keep. Our word is our word. The Gemara says there's a thing called Hamanas Devarim. A person says something, you can take his word on it. There are certain legal ramifications to commitments we make. In English, we call them an oral contract. There's such a concept as an oral contract. There was a case of this woman, not Jewish, who was engaged, and her fiancé broke the engagement, and she sued for breach of oral contract. She felt the engagement was a contract, and because he breached the contract, she's entitled to keep the diamond ring. She wanted to keep her ring. That was the issue they were litigating over. And he wanted the ring back, and she said, it's a breach of contract. I got to keep the ring. I'm pretty sure she got to keep the ring. You should know, by the way, from a Torah perspective, lo aleinu, in case of broken engagement, you give back the ring. You don't keep anything from the other person. Both sides. Both sides returns everything. You don't hold anything. It's very considered a bad, it's bad omen, unauspicious. It's not considered a good thing. Sometimes there are legal claims for financial reimbursement. If I'm sure you've heard of situations of broken engagements, sometimes very close to the wedding, and there's been a lot of money spent that's not going to be recouped. Money for airline tickets, money for deposits that are not refundable, whether for band, photographer, caterer, whatever it is. There are expenses that the money's lost. And there is halachic ground to make a claim on the side that breaks the engagement for reclaiming that money that was lost. And there's also halachic ground for a claim for what's called busha, d'mei busha, money for my embarrassment. It's very embarrassing for the party who didn't, maybe he's asking for both, but the one who did not break the engagement, they're entitled. They are entitled to a certain amount of money as pasha to appease them for their busha, for their embarrassment. The amount probably changes over time, and it depends on the situation, and I'm sure it's different if the engagement breaks 2 weeks after they're engaged or 2 weeks before the chasna, you know, the degree of busha involved. And there are legitimate claims in halacha for reimbursement. So does this go into breach of oral contract? You know, it's certainly, from a halachic term, you've caused someone loss. You've caused someone embarrassment, and therefore we have to deal with that. So MS is clearly something that we strive for. The Gemara tells us a story of a father and his son, and the father and mother did not communicate well, and whenever the father asked for one thing, she gave him something else, and when he asked for the other, she gave him that, between lentils and beans, and she just always got it backwards. So finally, the son got smart, and when the father would tell the son, tell your mother to make lentils tonight, he told the mother, can you make daddy barley soup? And then she made lentils. And when he wanted barley, he said to the mother, daddy wants lentil soup, and she made the barley. The miscommunication, you know, the language Aramaic and Hebrew, whatever it was. So the father says, son, why? Your mother got better. She understands me. So the son says, she doesn't understand you. I just switched it. When you ask for lentils, I say barley. When he asks for barley, he asks for lentils. So the father said, it was a good chap, but you shouldn't do it. Because the pasuk says, limdu l'shonam davar sheker. You're teaching yourself to speak false. V'sheker tircha, get stay away from sheker. Don't train yourself to say sheker. When the father asked the son, tell your mother I want lentils, and he told the mother, daddy wants barley soup, was that an outright lie or not?
No. But she's communicating to the mother what the father wants.
Maybe Shadavka made the opposite of what he wanted.
She didn't understand the word lentils?
Either she didn't understand or she was a shrew.
Right.
Right. So was he lying or not? I think she probably was a shrew. I think that's the way to say. I think she probably was like, I'll give him something else. And the father said, that's sheker. Because if he was communicating with the mother in her language, then he wouldn't have said just being a sheker.
It is, but shouldn't there be different levels? Like, it's not malicious.
No,
it's definitely not malicious.
It's for a good purpose.
Damn.
So this is where you get into an issue that I think is significant for all of us to know, and that is there's an issue in the Torah of lying in court. Lying in court is an issue. It's also to lie in court, and that's the Torah Sheker Tircha. You got to stay away from Sheker. You can't lie. But when someone asks for something for supper, they're not in court, and it really doesn't affect too many people, if any, maybe for the positive. And the Gemara doesn't say, the father said, don't do this because Dvar Sheker Tircha. It says, Libdu L'Shom Dvar Sheker, you're teaching yourself to speak false. So what I understand from this is that the only time it's absolutely forbidden to lie is when I'm in court, or perhaps any other time that I'm going to hurt somebody through my lie. But let's say people are rude and ask you something they shouldn't ask, which happens a lot. People ask you questions like, are you seeing someone seriously? Are you getting engaged next week? Married women never ever ask. Some people say, are you pregnant? Maybe she is, maybe she isn't. If she isn't, it's an insult. If she is, she doesn't necessarily want you to know. And this happened to me. A woman calls me up, she's expecting twins, which is also horrible when you think about it. They say, oh, you're expecting twins, which either means you're fat like a horse, right? If she's not expecting twins. And if she is, what's your business? And if she doesn't want to say no, because she doesn't give an ayin hara to herself, or if a woman's pregnant, she doesn't want to say she's pregnant, she doesn't give herself an ayin hara. And I think the ideal answer is, that's rude. You don't ask such questions. But everyone says, you can't say that. Very often the person asking you is older than you, someone, maybe it's your mother's friend, whatever it is. People will say things they should never say. People ask things they should never ask. I've heard too many stories. And I say, what were they thinking? And the answer is, they weren't thinking. Because any thinking person never would have said that or never would have asked that. So, in general, I think that maybe you could lie if it's none of your business and it's a rude question. The answer really should be, that's none of your business, a rude question. You may not feel comfortable saying that, okay? When it comes to pregnancy things, and you don't want to give yourself an ayin hara, I don't really have a good answer, except you really shouldn't be asking that question. Think about it, you'll figure it out. They shouldn't ask such a question. However you want to say it, in the nicest possible way. But they shouldn't be asking that question. Now, they may assume that means yes or whatever. I'm uncomfortable saying to say no when a woman is, because you doctor don't want to give yourself an ayin hara. And maybe you just like ignore them. I don't know. You have to figure out what's the best way that you can deal with this situation. But I don't think you're required to be truthful about personal things that's no one's business. In other words, the requirement to speak emes doesn't mean you have to spill your guts anytime someone asks you a question. You're not required to do that. And they really shouldn't be asking you. So you could be tactful, you could skirt it, but this is not a requirement that you should divulge your personal information to people that you're not interested in divulging information to.
What if somebody has a situation about like something that they is not someone's business, like in their past, and I don't know, let's say they're applying for a school or something, for high school, and they had something that they that happened in middle school or something. Is that, can you lie about something like that where it's not relevant anymore, but the person who's asking has a legitimate reason for asking?
When you're asked a straight out question and the question is legitimate, it's not prying. Mm-hmm. It's not being nosy. You can't lie. Mm-hmm. Unless you get a psak to your letter. Unless you get a psak to your letter. I'll explain that momentarily. So the point I'm making is that certain things people ask people, how much money do you make? That's not a nice question to ask someone. It's none of their business how much money you make. So you should just say it's none of your business, but you don't want to say that. So you could say, Baruch Hashem, I do okay. And some, are you pregnant? Baruch Hashem, I'm fine. Are you expecting twins? You'll be the first person I call. Yeah, when I start calling people, if I'm that, you'll be the first I call tomorrow. Whatever you want to say like that. With that
smart.
What?
People are too smart if you say, oh, I'm feeling good or something. You didn't answer their questions. They're just going to make assumptions.
Yeah,
but that's easy to say if you're not pregnant, but if you are, then...
But it's worse. If someone's not pregnant, someone thinks they're pregnant, that's not very nice. So, you know, it's brainless, people aren't thinking. So, I don't know, if they figure it out, what are you going to do? Again, I don't think you should say... Well, again, if you want to say that's a rude question, you should never ask such a thing. Because, hey, that's fine by me. I'm okay with that. You know, some questions you don't ask. Or to say it like that, you know, some questions you don't ask people. That's one of them. You know, right up there with how much do you earn? So it's just, it's some question you don't ask. The last thing in the Mishnah, Shalom. And we usually translate Shalom to mean peace. And I have a very strong suspicion that it does not mean peace, or perhaps we don't translate peace correctly. What does peace mean?
No conflict.
No conflict. Is that a good thing? I mean, it's better than conflict. But that's the ideal, that we should have no conflict. A cessation of hostilities. And some of we talk about peace and quiet. I kind of wonder if the way we use the word peace, we're really referring to shalva. The pasuk is shalom b'cheilech to shalva ba'aman osayich. You want shalva in your home. We say you want shalom in your home. I think you really mean shalva. Ose shalom b'mromov. What does that mean, Ose shalom b'mromov? Is the stars fighting with each other? And the Ibn Shalom, calm down, in your corners, simmer down, or stop fighting. Is that Ose shalom b'mromov? Well, what does it really mean, Ose shalom b'mromov? Shlemus? What does
things
that mean?
Complete. Normal.
They're in exact order.
In order, more than in order. You get it?
It's like they're working together.
Ah, very good. That's a better word for that, no college word. Working in?
Harmony.
I really believe shalom is harmonious relationships. Oh, so shalom b'mamav. The Baruch Hashem makes everything in the sky work in perfect harmony. He shalom b'cheilech. Among your troops, there should be shalom. Everyone knows what their job is. Everyone is doing what they're supposed to be doing. The shalva amunasayich. Shalom should not be underrated. Working in harmony is a big deal. Asher baras sasam v'simcha, chasam v'kala, gila v'yum v'yiz v'chedva, av v'yachva, shalom v'rayos. If this is in ascending order, which I believe it is, shalom is way up there. It's beyond Ava, it's beyond Achva, it's just behind Reyes. Good friend.
What's Achva?
Related, a brother. So you could be Oif someone who's not related to you, then there's a new relationship of Ach, which is even higher, a relative. Higher than that is shalom, someone you work together with. You don't even have to tell them, they already know your next move and they're going to complement and work together in tandem. Reus is your really good friend who is like the next highest level. And the goal in a marriage is to reach Reus, in my opinion. Chasim Kazil, levels of relationship. But Shalom is way up there. Shalom is way up there. And my understanding is it more has to do with not just like peace and quiet or tranquility, but rather to do with being able to work together. Which, like we said, ties in with chesed, the idea of working with other people. So, the world stands, din, emes, shalom. Now, what do we do when emes and shalom are in conflict with each other? If it's one or the other, you can't do both. Which one wins?
Shalom.
Shalom wins every time. And this is what the Gemara teaches us, that we are allowed to say an untruth for the sake of shalom. And we learn it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because Sarah Yiminu said, my husband is an old man, how am I going to have kids? And the Ben Hashem says to Avram, how could Sarah say that I am old, how can I have kids? It's not what she said. She said, my husband is old. The Ben Hashem changed a little bit. How can she say, I am old? And the Shvatim came to Yosef and they said, our father told that you should, and they never did. It never happened. But for Shalom, we see this concept of being Mishan and Mishalom. Now in English, we have an expression we use to describe such a falsehood, and we call it a
white lie.
It's called a white lie. It's well-intentioned, for a good purpose to maintain shalom. We shouldn't habitually lie, but on rare occasion, when it's necessary, the man hashalom, a lie is definitely in order. I went to Sherei Brachos many years ago, and I was really upset. The speaker was going on and on about the most important quality in a marriage is emes. It really bothered me. And if you would ask me, what is the most important quality in a marriage? I would say respect. Respect is number one. Husband has to respect his wife, wife has to respect her husband, and if you respect each other, everything else falls into place. MS? You gotta be kidding me. How do I look at this outfit? Fat. That's what you're supposed to say. How is dinner I prepared tonight? Horse food. That's good for Shalom Bayis. You're MS. Of course not. You can't say MS. Do you know how much trouble people get into by MS? If we were truthful all the time, it's terrifying. What would the world be like? Can't do that. Now, that doesn't mean that sometimes good friends and perhaps sometimes a husband and wife can give a positive critique. They want it, they need it. I mean, obviously, if something looks ridiculous on you, you want someone to tell you, you look like ridiculous, don't wear that. But it's gotta be the right person to tell that to you. But you want someone who's close to you to tell that to you, probably not your husband though, maybe someone else, maybe your mother, your sister, someone else, good friend. I don't think a woman should ever allow her husband to be the judge of her clothing. You know, let someone else decide. Not let her husband do that. Get in trouble. So, the importance of emes is clear to all of us. But you can ruin relationships with emes. There's no question. You're upset at somebody, and you shouldn't be. It's your own issue. So give yourself a day or two, and you get over it, and you'll understand them better, and life goes on. You're going to tell someone every time, be MS, and I have to be MS with you, and tell you, I'm so upset at you. If you're genuinely upset if something is wrong, you have to tell them. But MS, you have to be careful how you use MS. It could be it's the most destructive thing out there, if misused. Yeah?
Isn't MS for real, like Rodessa says, isn't that really for shalom? Isn't that really in the sense of shalom? It's not necessarily what's true, it's what the real is.
Well, I'm not familiar with Rav Dessler, but I know that the Piyatsetsna has a Marechas on Emes, where he says the true Emes is Hashem's Emes, which is not our Emes. And the Ribono Shel Olam's Emes is Hashem's Ratzon, which can change. So therefore, it's not even something that we can truly grasp as what we call true. Because it may not be in our eyes, but it's true by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem's Emes isn't necessarily our Emes. But we can't always judge that.
But Yaakov is MS, which is a mixture of Hasid and Gvura, Hasid and Din. So
it's a balance.
It's the balance.
It's a balance. But I'm saying the Ribono Shel Olam, we talked about it in Rosh Hashanah. It was Rosh Hashanah Shmuz that he gave about the Ribono Shel Olam's MS on Rosh Hashanah. It's in the bracha we say, an essay. The Ribono Shel Olam's MS is not necessarily our MS. The Ribono Shel Olam's truth is not what we scientifically could say is true. It's a different concept of MS.
So when you say MS, it's not necessarily a yes or no answer.
So if I say that someone's dress is beautiful and you go, I don't think so, that could be MS.
Right.
Maybe. But certainly not, what I'm referring to is the way we use the word. The way we use it, if I think something's one way and I say another way, I'm really lying. But it's okay.
But it might not be shekher.
I think the Gemara is saying it's Mishana B'nei Hashem. Based on what the Gemara tells us, in simple Nigla, it's Mishana, that's called Mishana. You're altering the truth. The Gemara doesn't say it was an MS when Hashem said to Avram, your wife said, I'm old. The Gemara says Hashem changed from what she said. It's Mishana, Mishana B'nei Hashem. So, when Shalom and Emes butt heads, Shalom always wins. And I think it's very, it can't be said enough. People will say true things that they regret. They should never have said. And sometimes you can never go back from it. Sometimes it's something that will cause such pain that no matter how much you try later to undo the damage, you can never undo it. I'm just thinking back of different conversations I had with people in their relationships, husbands, wives. Unfortunately, when things aren't going good, people can say some very hurtful things, and they're being 100% truthful. They shouldn't have been. They should not have been truthful. So a person has to be very careful. I would say resist the urge almost to say anything which will cause someone pain, even if it's 100% truthful. Now, there are people that have this challenge daily. If you're a physician, a person's an oncologist, they have bad news for a patient, so we're going to lie about it. So you have to know how to say it. There's a bedside manner, that's their profession. There's a way to talk about the MS.
What if you're an oncologist or something and you're giving someone a prognosis and you know they have a tendency towards depression and depression is not going to help them? So do you have to tell them, like, usually people only live 3 months, or can you be more vague?
Well, let's put it this way. In the Svarim, they talk about these kind of diagnoses. The Svarim say that it's one thing to be honest with a patient so that they can plan accordingly. But some Svarim will say that a physician never has the right to say how long a person will live. Because it's not in their hands. They can say, this person is very sick, it's a very serious illness, you should put your business in order. But to sell someone 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, many Svarim say that's not a doctor's place. The Torah gives the doctor license to heal. For apo yirape, there's no license in the Torah for a doctor to tell a person it's all over. You don't find that. Again, to tell them it's very serious. Even to tell a patient it's terminal, that we don't have a cure for this. But that's different than saying giving a time frame. So there are posts we don't like it. Now, sometimes there's a patient who's terminally ill and there's nothing can be done for them. So there is actually a sefer I have, a very respected sefer, that suggests that you don't tell the patient. Because what's to be gained? There's nothing they can do different. They will just get depressed. So what do I gain by telling them? Now, in America, I think it's pretty unacceptable to keep from the patient their true prognosis. It could be in Eretz Yisrael, it's more acceptable, I'm not sure. Certainly among foreign people, there's a tendency to do that, to just hide all kinds of things. You know, there was a time when people wouldn't tell elderly people when their relative passed away, because we didn't want them to find out and how they would react. People in their 80s and 90s, their sibling passed away, we keep it a secret. There's no secrets anymore. You know, in today's world, especially if you're a little bit tech savvy, there's no secrets. But it used to be, people didn't tell me about it. He had a great uncle, he was in Miami, and no one wanted to tell him that his sibling passed away. He went to the Mikveh of Shabbos, and said, oh, I feel so bad about you. You're going to find out. To keep these kind of secrets, there was a time when people were secretive. But it's very hard today to do that. So there's a tendency to, like, keep this information. There is a safe, like I said, a very trusted safe that does give this idea that if you can't do anything for the patient, then there's no point in telling them that there's nothing you can do for them. What are you going to gain by that? Perhaps tell the family, let them know to make the preparations that they have to make, but there's no reason to tell the patient. Again, I don't think that's mainstream American medicine. Not that I agree with everything that's mainstream American medicine either. There's a lot of things I disagree with. But this is just I'm not sure every Rav will agree with this particular point in the Sefer. But I do hear the logic of it. Like, what is the point, in fact, if there's absolutely no treatment or protocol for this patient? So what are we going to gain by telling them exactly how bad off they are? That's something to ponder. Yeah?
I'm just wondering, back to the Shalom thing. Like, Like, we learned that Aaron made shalom between different people by going in line to each
side. And that wasn't telling the truth, was it?
Right, but where are we supposed to do that? Because
it doesn't work when we do it.
Right, I was wondering
how that works. If you ever tried it, it doesn't work. With Aaron HaKohen, we'll go to two people in a machlekes and tell Reuven, oh, Shimon feels so bad, he wants to make up with you. And he goes to Shimon and says, Reuven feels so bad, he wants to make up with you, and they go make up. It only worked for Aaron because people wanted Aaron to think that they're okay and that they're not in machlekes. And he was such a holy person that if he wanted them not to have machlekes, that was enough motivation for them not to have machlekes. We can't do that because we don't care as much as Aaron cared. You know, when you try to get someone to do something, do you really care? If you really care, someone might listen to you. If you don't care that much, why would they do it?
Not necessarily approach them exactly, but like, I don't know, let's say send them a card from the person they're fighting with and both it. You know, like that kind of thing.
It'll blow up in your face.
Oh, right. Right.
It'll backfire.
Yeah.
It worked for Aaron because of who Aaron, he was a Oyev Shalom, Baroideh Shalom. That's his mahus, his essence. And people who were contacted by him felt the need to, okay, I'll make up. Yeah.
Isn't that a risk every time that you lie to prevent a non-Shalom situation?
That what? If a man tells his wife he thinks she looks beautiful, exactly. How's that going to backfire?
But what if, like, I don't know, she's shopping?
I mean, if he tells her that the supper she made is delicious, you know it'll backfire because why? Because she'll make it, that's right, for the next 120 years.
Like,
what's the story about the chicken?
And they'll be mortified. I don't know.
How's the story go?
He liked white meat and she liked dark meat.
And they always did
the
other way around?
Yeah.
Until one day, 60 years later, they make a discovery. Did they suffer because of that? They had a wonderful marriage because of that.
Yeah, maybe once in a while she really wanted.
Right.
She wanted.
The point is, when a husband is served a meal that he can't eat, he could say, you know, it's wonderful, but maybe next time try not to put so much salt in it. Or maybe try doing this a little different. Or maybe.
Don't.
That's fine. That means she's very appreciative that it was oversalted or overbaked. We're overcooked, and he's being very polite about it. She won't be angry at him. Would she be angry at him?
People have to learn how to take constructive criticism.
That's true.
You know, it's one thing when you work hard. Listen, you work all day, and you're taking care of the kids, and you're exhausted. You come home, you prepare supper, and your husband complains. You hit him on the head with the frying pan, right? But if he says it was fine, but you know, maybe if a little less salt would be even better, you're not going to hit him on the head with the frying pan. You're good. He appreciates your efforts. But if he just says, this is dog food, what's wrong? Who do you think I am? You get angry. If he says, it's delicious, but it'd be even more delicious if it didn't have so much salt in it, or if it wasn't overcooked, we didn't have this black char on top, it'd be delicious. You know, so then you've said it in a way that's not necessarily going to hurt her feelings. And if she's very sensitive, Rachmanis on him. That's where he goes. You know? That's where he goes. He'll just say, you know, let me make supper tomorrow night.
See, that is a smart way to deal with the situation.
And that may be how I'll have to deal with it. So, again, I just think people have to be very cautious. If you're in doubt, should I or shouldn't I say it? What are you always paskin? Don't say it. You can always choose to say it tomorrow. You can't take back once you said it.
Isn't it more common that people use, oh, for the sake of Shalom, I'll lie, as an excuse?
What do you mean?
Not to have to say the truth? As opposed to, like, isn't that more common that people would just lie because they don't want to have to say the truth?
A fellow went to a casino and his wife said, where'd you go? He said, oh, I was out in the Beis Medrash. So that's an excuse you're saying?
And then what happens when she finds
she'll find out
something that's incriminating casino-wise, and then
she... Well, what? There's no money for the groceries. Where'd the grocery money go? Unfortunately, this happens. I'm not saying... My context of Mishamani HaShalom is more specifically narrow to... When I wish I wouldn't have been asked this question, like, do I look good in this outfit, or is this supper or something like that? If someone's doing things that are wrong, and they're trying to cover up... So it's true, everything can become Mishalem Yashalem. Everything becomes, Mishalem bias, I'm allowed to lie. So that's not legit. That's not using it properly. It's abusing it. And there will be people who will abuse it. When you get the interview question, and they ask a pointed question, sometimes a Rav may tell someone, don't mention anything about this, you can lie about it. I'll give you an example. In Eretz Yisrael, there are religious high schools that teach Torah and secular studies, and they're called Tichon. And there are government-run schools, and there's private-run that are a higher caliber. Very similar to what you have in the United States, high schools that teach Kodesh and Chol. And in Eretz Yisrael, there's also a very large system of yeshivas that have no general studies at all, no secular studies at all. If a person is applying to a higher level yeshiva, they may ask, did you go to Tichon? And if you did, they won't take you. They'll only take you if you didn't go to Tichon. And there's a boy I know who went to Tichon. And he's an American family, moved to Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't like he was born and bred in Israel, and they thought this was the right school for him, and a lot of good people went to this particular, it's a well-known school, I think it's called Nativ Meir. It's very well-known, Choshev Hashivas. It's one of the better schools. But you can't go to Brisk if you went to Tichon, and he was going to Brisk, and he was told, lie. They'll ask you, went to Tichon, you say, no, I didn't go to Tichon. That's the psak he got.
It's an outright lie.
Yeah, an outright lie. So he could learn Torah in Brisk.
If he got found out, would he have been thrown out?
Of course.
Yeah.
That's
absolutely. Oh, no question about it. That's awesome.
That's indicative of a very big problem.
Oh, yeah, that's a separate like issue. By the way, it's very strange, too. So what school did you go to? I want a transcript. So Terrace must be, there are no transcripts in these schools. So who was your Rebbe last year? And who called him up? I mean, if you want to do the follow-up, obviously he'll be discovered pretty quickly.
But that can let him, put him into a really bad situation.
Not bad, still won't take him.
Was it specific
by the way, Brisk doesn't take everybody. They don't take a lot of people. But I'm just saying, he was told. Was it specifically him?
Yeah, was it?
Maybe because he was a big Balkishran and he was capable of learning on a higher level and so on. So therefore, they said, you fit in, you belong there. And just lie about the Tichon. And also, it's not like he's an Israeli who went to Tichon. He's an American Israeli, which is also a difference. So these are the distinctions. That my point is, sometimes someone might get a psak that they can lie about something. But barring such a psak, no, you can't lie about something. I know that wasn't what you were thinking of, but that's an example that I'm familiar with.
So weird, though.
Why is it so weird?
No,
why won't they take him?
To like get the school to take somebody who went to Tichon.
They don't want the bad influence of Tichon to infiltrate to the other Bachrim.
They can lie about it. Obviously, he's a very quality person.
And maybe the yeshiva of that yeshiva doesn't agree with the one who gave him sock. He is a quality person, by the way. But okay. And by the what? Yeah. No. He's not there now. This goes back. He's my age. This goes a long time ago. We were in yeshiva together in Eretz Yisrael, and eventually it came up that he was going to go on to the next level, and they told him he has to lie. He has to lie about it. They would take an American who went to a yeshiva that had English. Just because he was in Eretz Yisrael, that was the issue. And I don't think an Israeli would have been given the same side. But he was an American in Israel, and that's what he did. So it's not that often a person gets a psak to lie, but it could happen. Could happen, and then okay. But outside of that, I wouldn't say for something to show other things. The bottom line is there are some things that are like these big things, and people have shilas. When you have big shilas like that, so you get back to din. When you have machlekes, emes, and shalom, you don't know what to do. Ask a shilah, and I'll tell you. Okay, you should do in that situation. But again, if you're not sure to say it or not to say it, never say it. It's like, I think there's a saying, no one ever regrets what they didn't say. Plenty of people regret what they said. Sometimes people regret what they didn't say. Well, sometimes. Rare.
Not
a Jew. Okay, guys, have a good night.